thank you very much. And I do have that statute highlighted. And we'll hear from Steve Branchfar, and I think there was some discussion on this. And, of course, the intent was to go broader than just victims of sexual offenses. While the sexual offense case was what prompted a look at it, and certainly is an important part of it, I think the intent was obviously to go broader. But thank you, Linda, and let's hear from Steve Branchfar.
Good afternoon. My name is Steve Branchfar. And I guess, gosh, there's so many issues that have been raised by this discussion, and I'm not sure where to start, but I'll just sort of jump in.
Okay.
Regarding the question or the phrase that was used, the search for the truth, let me start with that. I suppose we could debate that at length in terms of what that means, because what the truth is to the defense is oftentimes far different than what the truth is to the state. I've heard judges in the past use the term that, the criminal justice machine does not provide a level playing field. And I agree with that, but I have to qualify that by saying that the reason it's not a level playing field is because in many respects, the criminal justice system favors the defendant against the state. So it's not level not because the state has the advantage, it's because the defense has the advantage. Let me give you some examples, and specifically to respond to Representative Garrett's inquiry about whether or not we have double or different standards for police and defendants. The answer is yes, of course we do. But that's not a bad thing. There are many areas in the law that involve different standards. For example, the defense starts out with a clean slate as the judge instructs the jury and has the presumption of innocence. It's something the state has to overcome, so the scales of justice don't start off equally balanced. The defendant has the Fifth Amendment right not to be called upon, which includes, and it has been interpreted to include, not to require him to share the discovery. A few years ago, the legislature promulgated a reciprocal discovery statute in an effort to level the playing field, so that if the defendant wanted discovery, he would have to provide discovery to the state to avoid surprises. And that was declared unconstitutional. So yes, there are different standards, but each different standard, I believe, serves legitimate public policy. Now, it's true that the defense has the right to conduct their own investigation in a criminal case, and this bill does not impair that. But the truth of the matter is that the investigation that the defense does is not anything like the investigation the police do. Because the police start out ground zero. They start out in the dark. They don't know what the facts are. They don't know who the responsible person is. By the time the defendant is charged, after they determine who's responsible, and after the defendant, after the state gets involved, the public defender has the benefit through Criminal Rule 16 of all that discovery. They get copies of the lab reports, all of the police reports, the statements, etc. So when they go out to conduct an investigation, as they did in Brooks' case, they are not starting out from ground zero to find out what happened. They are going to, and they're not necessarily trying to find, quote, the truth. What they're trying to do is sustain the burden that they have, which is the burden of creating reasonable doubt. It's not moving the case beyond reasonable doubt. It's creating doubt. And the way they do that is by obtaining statements, preferably recorded, at least in my experience, that's what they do, in order to impeach witnesses at trial in an effort to undermine the state's case. And when that happens, when mid-trial impeachment occurs, witnesses lose credibility, and it makes it very difficult for all jurors to agree beyond reasonable doubt. Oftentimes, the state is surprised, and that can prejudice the case. Now, the bill that you have before you, all it does is it requires parental input when the defendant or the defense attorney wishes to obtain a recorded statement. And that brings up to a level the situation, the status quo, regarding when the public defender or defense investigator wishes to obtain a non-recorded or written interview from a minor. It just extends the same protection to the same class of minors. That same class of people, which are the minors, I think it also serves another interest, which is it helps parents and guardians learn about what's going on in their children's lives. And it helps them make smart decisions. It helps them make decisions that hopefully avoid bad decisions that will have a lifelong lasting effect. So yes, we do have different standards, but I think that there are legitimate public policies that underlie those different standards on both sides. Thank you.
Ms. Tondini?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Vanessa Tondini. Linda, I just wanted to respond briefly to your suggestion to apply the written authorization requirement in 1261.125B to both recorded and non-recorded statements. And to be honest, just to let you know, that is where we started out. And the only reason why we ended up amending Section 120 is because if you read Section 125.2A, it reads, if the statement is taken as a recording, the recording is taken in compliance with AS 1261.120. So that shoots you back to Section 120, which is why we're amending that section. And the only reason why we wish to make that the addition in this bill in that section is because the procedures that the recording needs to comply with are extensively laid out in Section 120. So we wanted to make sure that those recording procedures also were followed in cases dealing with sexual offenses. And that sort of leads up to what Representative McGuire was explaining in our discoveries as we were working through this bill. We didn't want to be inconsistent into where we were applying or requiring parental consent. If it's currently recorded for non-recorded statements in sexual offenses, and we definitely want to apply it to recorded statements in sexual offenses, why would we then not apply it to the one area that, if what we're saying is parental consent is inherently required because these minors aren't legally competent to waive these rights, then we should make it clear in the statutes and be uniform and make sure it applies both to recorded and non-recorded statements for sexual offenses and all offenses. So that was sort of our thought process, just to clarify, and that's why we did expand it to all sections of 120.
That was the longest sentence in history.
Okay. Thank you. I just passed.
Representative Kira.
Representative Anderson's never read the book Magic Mountain. That's got the longest sentence in history, and it's the first sentence.
I once read a sentence in a property textbook in law school written in the 1800s by some sadistic judge. 100 words. And no wonder nobody could understand it. No wonder they gave it to us.
Thanks. Mr. Branchflower, this is Les Guerra speaking. And, we obviously disagree on this one. And I don't know if you were here the other day. It's, the discussion on these criminal bills gets very frustrating because, one side will always say, well, as defense folks, we only represent innocent people. And then the guys on the prosecution side will say, as prosecution folks, we only try and convict guilty people. And, all I have to say is, usually it's guilty people that are charged, and sometimes it's innocent people that are charged. And we cannot come up with rules assuming that all people who are charged are guilty. Sure, we should make it easier to convict guilty people, but sometimes by doing that, we make it easier to convict innocent people. And that's the struggle that we have down here. So I know that you feel very strongly that it's, the defense's job to create reasonable doubt, but sometimes they're creating reasonable doubt because their clients are innocent. That's the root of the problem I see here. Assume we have a defendant who's innocent, who's being wrongly charged with a crime, who's being threatened that they're going to go to jail for something they didn't do. And there aren't many greater injustices than that. There are some, but there aren't many. Assume that's the case. Why are we making it easier for the prosecution to prove the case against the innocent person than we are making it for the defense team to prove that the person is innocent? I mean, it seems like the rule should be consistent. If the investigator for one side should get parental consent, the investigator for the other side should get parental consent. If the investigator for one side shouldn't get parental consent, then the investigator for the other side shouldn't get parental consent. That I could live with. So let's come up with a rule that protects people in the greatest manner possible. And maybe to protect victims and maybe to protect minors, we should always require parental consent. That would be fine with me. I don't have a problem with that. I do have a problem if we're going to tilt the playing field so it makes it easier for one side to prove their case than the other. I do recognize your other point that sometimes we do tilt the playing field in favor of one person than the other, and you said, sure, a defendant starts with the presumption of innocence. I'm not willing to get rid of that tilt in the playing field. I think that's a good rule, but I don't think it's a good rule to tilt the playing field here. I mean, I guess it's just a difference in policy, and you and I have agreed on a lot of things over the last year and a half, but I can't see eye to eye on this one. So I guess I would ask you, if there is possibility that a defense investigator will act in an abusive manner towards a minor, isn't it also possible that an investigator for the prosecution will investigate the case in an abusive way towards a minor as well? Shouldn't we be concerned about that also?
Well, I think that you raise a lot of issues. I think reality is that most DA's offices around the state, and it's certainly the case in Anchorage because I did it myself. I was the head of the felony intake unit in Anchorage for about 15 years. Most cases involving innocent, legally innocent people are screened out, the great majority of them. It's true that we do, from time to time, have juries return not guilty verdicts. In the cases that I'm familiar with, I would say that that what those verdicts represent was a failure of proof and not an, in fact, not guilty person in the sense that the person did not commit the crime. So it would be sort of like not proven as opposed to not guilty. I don't think it's workable nor necessary to impose the same requirement on police of contacting parents, and there's a good reason why. And it's simply this. The police, in most instances, have the same best interest of the witnesses, and to include minor witnesses, as the parents do. They are, the interests of the police and the victims and the parents are all in sync because all of them desire to hold the culpable person accountable. Mm-hmm. So a police officer is not looking for, unlike a public defender investigator, is not looking for inconsistent statements that will be used to impeach the person at the time of the trial. So society, through their police, have an interest in sustaining the burden in order to hold offenders accountable. That's why the caption of the case is State of Alaska versus an individual member of society. Society has a duty to protect victims. That's mandated in the Constitution. So I think it would be unduly burdensome to impose the same requirement on police. The legislature has an obligation to protect its citizens from undue influence. And that's exactly what the statute does, and especially so when it comes to minors.
Okay, we unfortunately are going to have to adjourn today, and we'll bring this up on Monday.
Can I ask one sentence?
One quick, and then we'll have the same people back on Monday and the same issue.
And I'm just wondering if anybody's ever thought, you know, a person has a right to the privacy of her own body with respect to an abortion and doesn't have to get parental consent for that. Suppose she wants or he wants to talk to the police. This won't let them without the parents' consent, or the defense for that. Sorry, the defense. And I'm wondering whether the witness has a right constitutionally to talk to who they want to, a free speech right. And I'm wondering if that's ever been considered.
We will consider that and bring it back up Monday. And with that, we are adjourned.